a necessary disclaimer. On my committee, which is the House Foreign Affairs Committee, no longer the House International Relations Committee. That name was reverted to its earlier name earlier this year when the Democrats took over. Gave me permission to do this talk, which is very unusual, and I appreciate their letting me do so. I just want to say that the opinions and view and analysis that I express are strictly my own, not those of Chairman Tom Lantos of the committee or the Democrat or the Democratic caucus on the committee, certainly not of the U.S. Congress, just my own. I wanted to say a few words about the election and a few words about congressional attitudes and overall U.S.-Turkish relations, and then I hope to sit down and listen to everyone else and learn a lot, as I have from the first two fascinating presentations. First of all, this was a tsunami that happened last night. This was unprecedented in Turkish history. Matt pointed out that in the 1950s, Adnan Menderes's Democrat Party, it also increased its percentage of the vote when it was reelected. But it increased its percentage of the vote by a little over 3%. AK Party has increased its percentage by more than a dozen points. And that's an astonishing performance. And if you glance at the map on the Hurriyet website, the website of one of the leading dailies in Turkey, which is color-coded, it's a pretty remarkable sight. Yellow or orange is the color of Farak, and the whole country is just swathed in yellow-orange with a few fringes around the sides and a couple of dots of another color off to the east. But it was a powerful victory. It certainly has the feel of a revolution, or at least the inception of a brand new era, although I'm not convinced that's the case. I think that remains to be seen in practice, and I think Erdogan, in his acceptance speech last night, was trying to send a message that, in fact, it's business as usual. If anything, that this is a kinder and gentler AK Party that has just been reelected. That's the message he was trying to send. But, you know, just again, and then I'll stop on this theme of revolution and pay on to AK's accomplishment. But we have to keep in mind that this is a party that is led by people who little over a decade ago were calling for the rejection of NATO and the EU and the formation of Islamic world counterparts. They now take a very different point of view. They certainly project a very different point of view. It's something that I think 15 years ago no one would have ever dreamt, that the current leadership of Turkey would be who it is, much less how solidly ensconced it would be in power. Another point along the line of revolution, and I think this has to be said, it's noteworthy, a majority of Turks voted for anti-establishment parties. If we see AK as an anti-establishment party, which most of us do, I think, and if we add to that the votes for the Saadet Party, which is the party whose spiritual mentor, if not actual leader, is Necmettin Erbakan, who, after all, once upon a time was also Erdogan's mentor. If we add to their tiny 2%+ total, and we add another few points that were cast for Kurdish, pro-Kurdish independence, That adds up to over 50%. And I think that has the traditional Turkish establishment looking in the mirror this morning and trying more than ever to figure out what went wrong. Of course, this is the apex of a trend that has been in the works for quite some time now. I think it also has to be said that it will be seen as a rebuke to the military, and I think it is in many ways a rebuke to the military. After all, when the military issued its famous April 27th e-Muhtıra, I guess it's called, warning that was posted on its website, AK was variously in the polls, you know, from the high mid-20s to the low 30s, and it ended up with over 46%. When I was in Turkey 2 weeks ago, the conventional wisdom that I was hearing from everybody across the spectrum, AK people and anti-AK people, was that AK had gained 3 to 5% in the polls as a result of the military's intervention. It's hard to know exactly how many points it did gain, but it certainly doesn't appear to hurt it. It's somewhat reminiscent, except on a much larger scale, of then-President Kenan Evren's last-minute intervention in 1983, when he made a speech just before the election urging, in a very thinly veiled way, urging Turkish voters not to vote for Turgut Özal. And Özal, of course, also won, I believe it was 44%, and won a thumping majority in parliament. So I think all of this, it's probably not easy. I'm sure the military gives this far more thought than I do, how to calibrate what they do for maximum effect. But it just reminds me, once again, what of the conventional wisdom that Turks have a very high regard for the military, but when it comes to politics, they prefer it in the barracks. They like having it there as a firewall, but they tend not to want it to be too intrusive. Now, will these results make the military more reticent about intervening? It will certainly make those who would be acquiescent to such intervening, I think, harder pressed to support or to acquiesce, to accept such intervention. And I mean that both domestically and foreign. But just to repeat my question, will it in fact make them more reticent about intervening? That's not completely clear to me. The military said very directly in its April 27th statement that it is not impartial in matters it considers fundamental to the existence of the republic, and I really doubt that that feeling will change. I think the military does feel at its leadership level and also at its lower, famously at its junior officer level, feels a great deal of responsibility for the endurance of the republic as they understand it. I think, again, to refer to Erdogan's acceptance speech last night where he said, where he made statements, and I don't know, some of you follow it, again, as I'll say, I know many of you follow it on a day-to-day basis more than I do. It seemed to me a rather exceptional series of statements coming from him. He said, no concessions on the fundamental principles of the republic. You know, he referred to our hero Ataturk. There were a number of statements like this. Look, I think at a minimum it showed he understands how the military feels about the republic. It's not clear to me that the Kurds fully understand this, however. And when I say the Kurds, I mean actually the pro-Kurdish party, whose independents were elected roughly at the level of two dozen. Was that the final 24? 23. I know the figure kept going back and forth last night. There are roughly two dozen. I guess the final results aren't really certified, so we'll see. A former parliamentarian from their ranks, and maybe their most the most famous member of their ranks, Leyla Zana, just 2 days before the election, spoke about how Turkey needs to be divided up into provinces, she said. But she used a word for provinces, which was generally understood to mean more than just the units called provinces. Now she used a different word, which is generally understood, certainly in this context, to mean a bigger grouping of provinces. And she said one of these provinces should be the Kurdistan province. Now, we know that is a word and a concept. I mean, it seems to me by using the Turkish word bölünme in terms of division, even if she didn't mean literally separation, and by talking about and using the term Kurdistan and talking about what in effect is a federation, she crossed many of the military's red lines. I was struck when Ahmet Türk, who was elected to parliament and is the co-leader of the DTP, the pro-Kurdish party, when he was asked about Zana's comments, he said, yes, this is our intention. Now, I saw Zana herself tried to back off a little, and she said, look, I'm at the foremost of those who say this country should not be divided, but I'm taken together. These statements, at the very least, I think will put the military, not to mention other Ataturks, very much on edge, if not over it. I think for this pro-Kurdish group to be successful, and it will, whatever its final total, it will have more than the 20 needed to form a party group within parliament. To be accepted as part of the system, it needs to buy credibility. And this is really an old story, but it seems to me it needs to unequivocally renounce violence and separate itself unequivocally from the PKK. I don't think it's off to a good start, unfortunately, in that regard. Regarding relations with Congress, in general, Turkey's relations with Congress, I think, have improved a lot in recent years, over the last decade or so. Number of things. I think there's greater appreciation for Turkey's strategic importance, certainly after 9/11, greater appreciation for it as a Muslim-majority democracy, the role it played in Afghanistan, any number of issues. The rapprochement with Greece, which was started by George Papandreou and the late and lamented Ismail Cem, has had a very important effect, I think, positively for Turkey and Congress, because when Athens isn't angry at Ankara, pro-Greece congressmen tend not to be angry either. The Hellenic Caucus does remain powerful, far more so than the Turkey caucus, which numbers now nearly six dozen, because the Hellenic caucus, I think, is rooted in the considerable political strength of the Greek-American community. That said, I think Erdogan's victory, and I say this tentatively, it can bode well for Turkish relations with Congress. Why? First of all, Erdogan has projected a less nationalist tone. I think this has helped his relations with the executive branch as well. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I say less nationalist than previous governments. His concessions on Cyprus, which were unprecedented, I think still resonate quite well in many circles. Second of all, I think he scores points with his attitude of restraint. It's been a somewhat equivocal attitude, but at its strongest expression, at one point it was clearly restraint regarding northern Iraq. We'll see if that continues. Congress certainly does not want to see any kind of serious Turkish military intervention in northern Iraq. But the AKP election is problematic in other ways, and potentially seriously so, if it reinforces some of AK's previously exhibited tendencies. And this is particularly regarding the Middle East. And I'm referring to a series of issues that have come up over the years, calling Israel a terrorist state back in 2004, inviting Khaled Mashal, the Hamas leader, in 2006. The friendship with Syria, and more recently, a gas deal with Iran, which has not gotten a lot of attention. And I think personally, I'm not clear on all the details. I don't know if anyone really is. I was actually just talking to my chief advisor on energy issues, Patrick Clausen, just before this event started. And he also says it's, if I understood him correctly, not clear if there is an investment component to the South PARs part of this agreement. But if there is, that will be seen as a very serious breach. I think Iran is already a huge issue in Congress, but it will only become more so as the year goes on and as the session goes on. And I think if Erdogan wants to avoid problems with Congress and problems with the U.S., he's going to have to tread that line very, very carefully. I would just say, I know a lot of attention has been given to the famous 9% and, you know, the U.S. is low standing in Turkey. All of that is a concern. Actually, when I was in Turkey, somebody I spoke with set out for me the seven deadly sins, as he called it, that the U.S. has committed against Turkey. I guess there's probably not time to go through them, but they're quite wide-ranging. I would just say, though, that most of them, in some fashion or another, stem from Iraq. And as long as the problem in Iraq continues, I think it's going to be very difficult for us to smooth out this relationship. I am worried about the long-term fraying. In the 1990s, in the days when the three ambassadors who are present today were guiding the ship, there were three issues that always seemed to me to be the pillars. They're the three legs of the stool. I'm not sure what the right metaphor was, but they were the three keys to bonding this relationship. And they were U.S. support for Turkey against the PKK, rhetorically and in acquiescing to Turkish military actions, one. Two, support for Turkey's EU membership, and three, or at least its progress towards EU membership, and three, the Baku-Ceyhan pipeline. None of those three issues really have the kick they once did. On the PKK, we're not at all on the same place regarding Turkish military action. The EU is less salient to Turks these days in any way. Their membership is really, their process is really at a level where it's hard for the U.S. to do much for them. And on the pipelines, I'm gratified to hear some of the things Matt said. But none of it right now, at least, has the headline quality that Baku-Ceyhan had. I think the parties still need each other. There are important bonding elements. I know my time's coming to an end, so I won't enumerate them. Turkey's role as a Muslim majority democracy is critical, I think, and very important to the U.S. I think Turkey, the U.S. is still a critical friend in the diplomatic arena. The U.S. also has a lot of influence in the IMF, which is still an important factor in Turkey's economic stability. But overall, I fear that this relationship is less important to Turks than it was. And Turkish dependence on the U.S. has diminished as Turkish strength has grown, and U.S. leverage over Turkey has diminished accordingly. So U.S.-Turkish relations remain important, but they are likely to remain troubled for a long time. This is a relationship that will have to be managed carefully for some time to come. Thank you very much.